Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, March 8th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. A couple of heads up on events. For the Uluru week, May 13th to 17th, we've had several cancellations. We were sold out, but several people had family emergencies and obligations. That's graduation time. Anyway, so now we have 4 slots open. If you're interested, just let us know at customerservice@salieri.com. We can send you our brochure and tell you all about it if you're interested. June 2nd, I'm coming back from Australia and New Zealand through San Francisco. We're going to have a lunch in San Francisco. We're still working on that venue. It's a Saturday. Hold that date. Finally, I'd said last week I was planning an event for Dennis Kucinich in Ohio. He came out very uncomfortably for gun control issues, and I just need to talk to him before I do it. So that's a little bit up in the air, but I'll keep you posted. Our theme tonight is from Sherlock Holmes, The Game is Afoot. But I'm also reminded of the great line in Tomb Raider after the SWAT team achieves their purpose of stealing the clock from the protagonist's home. Well, I guess what they got what they're coming for. We are watching across the internet very serious cyber warfare impacting independent media. And the reality is it's the corporate media is trying to keep control of the narrative, the intelligence agencies too, and they're fighting hard. And it's, of course, it's not working, but they're fighting hard. There was an operation in 2005 that occurred every year until 2010 that we can document called Silent Horizon, run by the CIA to prototype and simulate cyber wars. It wouldn't surprise me if what we're watching going on now is, you know, they always do a training exercise or a drill, while in fact what's going on under the carpet is censorship big time. Anyway, you know, part of the targeting of Silent Horizon was anti-globalists. That's anybody who's for the Constitution and freedom. Another problem was that they were clearly losing control of the Parkland narrative. CNN's ratings are way down in February. Hollywood and the Oscars way down. And the Parkland narrative just wasn't working. There were too many videos. And, you know, too many people are sort of hip to this whole thing now. Great disclosures about the Secret Service being at Parkland High School to do drills and all sorts of anomalies and problems with the evidence. So what have we been dealing with? First of all, and I haven't talked about it very much because it's for legal reasons, I need to just be careful. But we had a systems administrator die in December who, in the last years of his life, had really become extremely unstable. And that was part of the challenges that we were dealing with to build the new site and get it migrated. Obviously, our site was hacked, but also we've had blocking by Google, Yahoo, AT&T. We've gotten them all reversed except for AT&T. Some team members have had computers targeted. Now we're the queen and kings of backup, so it wasn't a problem, but we did have to buy and load one computer, so that's another staff day spent getting a new computer, getting it set up, getting it loaded. We're fine on servers. We have excess servers in multiple jurisdictions around the world and have done so for a long time. And as I said, we have an excessive number of backups. But this is all very time-consuming and expensive. Finally, there have been inexplicable series of problems with credit cards, payment gateways, payment providers that just, again, it all comes down to time and expense. And I apologize profusely for the fact that we're not up and operating. What we have done is we've made sure that there's plenty of content available, and I'll go through that in a second. Now, why do I think this was a Silent Horizon kind of operation? Because you've got an integrated pushback of U.S. intelligence agencies, telcos, social media. This is full court press. We did see Trump campaign manager tweeting out a warning saying that they expected balance. But the reality in all of this, you've seen a lot of headlines. A lot of the other independent media depend on YouTube and Facebook and other social media for ads. We don't. We're completely independent. We just earn money from our subscribers and sell subscriptions. So, you know, you can't cut us off from YouTube. We have some stuff on YouTube. We're migrating it to BitChute, but Vimeo's our major provider, so we don't depend on YouTube, and we don't depend on Facebook, and we certainly get no revenues from them. I do use Twitter, but I don't depend on Twitter, but I don't depend on it. So we're kind of odd man out. We're also not part of the culture wars. We're focused entirely on the money and enforcing the Constitution. So you haven't seen a lot of notice about us getting thrown off of YouTube because we couldn't care less. Again, as I said, we're migrating. We've been using YouTube as a backup for our videos, but we're going to migrate them over to BitChute. So why us? Why such a tough, because we're really dealing with a major thing here. It's a combination of the pension and missing money. The reality is, if you look at where the federal budget is going, if anything, they need the pensions more than ever to finance the U.S. Treasury. Their vulnerability, think of the Star Wars, there's only one vulnerability in the Death Star, and that vulnerability is to cut off the money. Now, their best defense is a good offense, which is why they're making such a big hullabaloo about gun disinvestment by Florida teachers and BlackRock. But you notice we can do disinvestment when the New World Order wants it, but we can't do disinvestment when the people want it. And they certainly don't do disinvestment to kick out the criminals. So if we look at the banks that engineered the housing bubble, we just saw a new court settlement. Lehman's bankruptcy estate will pay $2.4 billion to compensate for its role in the mortgage crisis. But who's it going to pay it to? Hedge funds. Oh, God. Anyway, so the big problem here is that pension funds are big buyers of treasuries. If the treasury is missing through DOD and HUD $21 trillion, why should pension funds, why should our savings finance that when, in fact, what we're getting back in exchange for giving our hard-earned savings is IOUs from ourselves? So, you know, the problem when you connect the pension fund story with the missing money, you start to really threaten the source of their financing. Because, as I said, I think if you look at what's happening with military budgets and the reluctance of countries around the world to keep buying treasuries, you know, they're planning on even more from the pension funds. Anyway, so what we're looking at is a very fragile system, and obviously we've hit at the core place, which is why for 20 years I've been talking about that core place, because I've always believed the only way you can really shift the model is to basically shift the money and say, you know, we're not going to finance criminal enterprise. We're going to hold you accountable for the law. Anyway, this has all turned out, oddly enough, to be a blessing in disguise, because we've been operating now for more than a year with our team totally divided between two websites. You got Team A working on the new website, you got Team B working on the old website, and now we can swing together and just focus entirely on the new website, which is beautiful and simply a delight to work with. And one of the things we found in the process of doing this, when you deal with as much sort of spiritual warfare and interference as we do, you've got to have much greater internal mastery, and you've got to do things open source. Again, more time, more money, but wow, it's worth it. Anyway, so I'm pretty excited about the new site. We're targeting now, I thought we were going to come up this week, we're targeting next week, so long as we can get a new store. We had built a new store, but now given the payment gateway problems, we're going to have to build a whole new store real fast. And as long as it tests out, we should be up by midweek. But I don't want to promise that the testing will work. You never know. Some of you have helped us as testers. We really appreciate it. There are a ton of links. If you go to Solaria.com, you'll skip over to our latest update, and you can get links for this week's Solaria report and Money and Markets, both interview and Money and Markets. Last week's Solaria report, a special report that Harry Blaser did on the human future, and then the week before Bill Nyman. So there's a ton of content, and we have the annual wrap up at pension.solaria.com. All those links, if you go to solaria.com, you'll skip right over to the update. All those links are there. So all the current content is up, it's available, and the annual wrap-up is there. If you need anything, please email us at customerservice@solaria.com or call customer service at 906-643-6263 or toll-free at 866-311-2543. And those numbers will be in the notes that we'll have up at we have all the Solari reports up at constitution.solari.com. If you just go in the navigation bar to Solari Report and drop down, they're all there. So please do yourself a favor. Stop using depending on large corporate email and social media providers. They are censoring the content that you get. So if you subscribe to Solari and you want that content and they play dirty tricks and constantly are blocking emails or doing other things, they're using dirty tricks to censor you. Please get away from them. The one we're having the toughest time with, and the one I've had the toughest time with for the last 20 years, is AT&T. They're on my number 1, 2, 3 list of criminal enterprises. My backup email is StartMail. Many subscribers use SmartMail or ProtonMail. And there are many great mail services, but maybe we even ought to do a Solari report on sort of email options. But please don't pay and don't use the big corporate email and social media providers, because they're, if you look at what they're doing to independent media, they're making sure you can't get the information you want. So please do not put yourself at their mercy. One funny story I have to just tell you, because everything's a war. I recorded a show with Greg Hunter on Tuesday, and he kept holding up the picture of the annual wrap up with the cow, and the cow being milked, and the bucket having a hole in the thing. And he kept talking about the cow and how the spots on the cow's back were a map of the world, the different contents, and the cow and milking the cow. And he kept bringing it up, cow, cow, cow. Tuesday night late, my neighbor's cow breaks out of the pasture and makes a mess all over my lawn, including leaving huge cow pies across my lawn. He thought, oh, the cow got me back. Anyway, tonight I'm preparing this. There's a knock at the door, and it was one of the lieutenant deputies from our sheriff's department. The cow was out again, sauntering across my property. So I thought, great, now we have cow wars. I've offended the cow. Money and markets. Remarkably, the announcement or the start of trade wars by Donald Trump has not trashed the dollar. The dollar's now off about 1.39% for the year. We're trading right on the between 90 and 91, so right on that line. And, it looks like we might make it back to 92, and maybe we're not going to get a break at 92. Let's see. Fixed income, the Treasury, long Treasury, is off 6%. It didn't worsen with the Trump trade wars, which surprises me. I thought it would worsen. The intermediate Treasury now down almost 3% for the year. The bond aggregate down 2%. And junk, first sort of negative year it looks like we're going to have on junk, down 1.16%. ECB drops their pledge to buy more bonds if needed. This happens, of course, after Trump's announcement that he's going to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum, which he did today. Mr. Draghi said the immediate impact of the tariffs, and remember this is the head of the ECB, was, quote, not going to be big. But he added that unilateral decisions are dangerous and expressed concern about the direction the White House was headed in international economic relations. Quote, if you put tariffs against your allies, you wonder who your enemies are, Mr. Draghi said. So, you're going to put tariffs on our steel, we're not going to buy your bonds. That leaves the U.S. mortgage market now at a four-year high for U.S. mortgage rates, and real questions about how the housing market's going to fare. Now, I think in the strong areas, we're seeing a lot of inflation, and of course, all that money being repatriated back in, I think it's going to continue to buoy the housing markets and in the areas where you're seeing global 3.0 grow. Equities now up 2.71%. Again, I was surprised. The trade wars have not yet trashed equities. Interestingly enough, J.P. Morgan Chase, the co-president, basically warned equity markets could fall as much as 40% in the next 2 to 3 years. His comments came as investors worry over the effect of central banks raising interest rates and rising inflation. It could be a deep correction, said Pinto, the bank's co-president, in an interview with Bloomberg Television. It could be between 20 to 40%, depending on the valuation. 25%, 20 to 25% is a deep correction. More than 25% is not a correction. It's a bear market. So I disagree with JP Morgan Chase on that one. I think it's unlikely to go into a bear market, although anything's possible. But this one surprised me. Of course, we see Goldman saying we're going to have a deep correction, too. Anyway, there's no doubt people are nervous about how high the equity markets are. Home builders now down almost 7% for the year. Again, that's very much interest rates. Europe, the VGK ETF is flat. Germany down 1%. Take a look at the chart of Germany. It really took a swan dive over the last week or two. Some of that being the tariffs and trade war. Developed markets minus North America doing generally flat. China large cap up 3.25, small cap up 4.75, and emerging markets up 3.37%. So China and the emerging markets doing well. The commodity index flat for the year. Gold up 1.43%, silver down 2.75%, and oil now up 1.38%. That means oil has come down. It was doing much better at the beginning of the year. Trade wars. There's no doubt about what the story of the week is. It's trade wars. We see 11 nations sign on to a revised TPP equivalent deal, now called the CPTPP, Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that was signed up this week without the United States, and that's a very, very big deal. The U.S. is very much playing lone wolf now. As opposed to leader of the open trade model globally. Trump has slapped 25% tariffs on steel, 10% on aluminum imports. Canada and Mexico got accepted, but it's going to hit allies, South Korea, Brazil. It'll hit China as well. It's very interesting the way this is done because we're looking at many, many different exceptions. Under the new rules, an importer can ask the Commerce Department for a waiver. And now what we're going to see is we're going to see a huge number of car companies, can makers, all sorts of different players lining up to get waivers from the Department of Commerce and no doubt having to lobby the White House and Treasury. So this is going to get very interesting if Washington is playing let's make a deal on big tariffs. So this could get very complicated, and I'm not sure setting up a let's make a deal kind of process like this could turn into a political nightmare and a logistical nightmare. But meantime, U.S. Steel announces that they're reopening a plant in the U.S. Very good for the politics of this. One of the things I'm guessing is very much behind the president and Wilbur Ross and some of the other trade players in the administration is with the U.S. ballooning its military operations and its space activities and purchases, you're talking about enormous orders and volume demand for both steel and aluminum. And the last thing Trump is going to want is for American treasuries to be sold to American pension funds to finance bigger U.S. military and space activity and have all of that create more strategic capacity for Europe and Asia and basically our capacity continues to get weaker. So he's thinking very strategically, if this is American money and American financing that's powering this, we want to make sure we have plenty of aluminum and steel capacity here. So this is if you look at the capacity that's been building around the world, particularly in China versus our capacity here, there's no doubt, you know, we lack the anywhere near the capacity they now have. So Trump is saying this is a major strategic issue. But of course, this flips the whole trade model we've been working with since Bretton Woods on its head. I mean, it's very interesting. An Economist has a really nasty new picture of its story on this, and the title is "The Threat to World Trade: The Rules-Based System is in Grave Danger." So, you know, the intimation is we're going from a system of rules and principles to a system of arbitrary deal-making, which could put the world in a very incoherent state. Campaigns. One note, the SEC began regulatory actions against a whole series of ICOs, which is giving the is one of the dampers on the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency markets. Bitcoin is now back under 10,000. As I've said before, I think the variety of parties are planning on using Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies to do a lot of laundering through the 2018 elections. So I really don't see the Bitcoin cratering before then. Now, what could happen after that? Anything goes. But again, what I keep warning you about is make sure you've got your principal out and you're playing from your winnings as soon as possible. The Italian elections are a real message. The Euroskeptics won big. And so we now have three parties. Essentially, the right takes the north, the new five-star group takes the south, and you've got another piece getting a piece of the center. One commentator said, we're back to the Bourbon Kingdom. It's very interesting. But it's clearly Euroskeptic. And so we'll see what happens, because no party came out with an outright majority. So there's quite a process to get to a final parliament here. The primary season is getting revved up with campaigns for the U.S. elections in November. We have not only all the Congress, but we have a fair amount, 30-plus Senate races, 30-plus gubernatorial races. So it's going to be quite an interesting season. And that gives you an opportunity to have a lot of say about what's going on with the missing money and pension funds. So we'll talk about that more in the future. But think of this as an opportunity for you to learn a lot more about what's going on that could impact your family budget and be in a position to do something about it. I talked last week about Xi Jinping essentially achieving the suspension of term limits in China. This is a very big deal. China is completely throwing off any patina of adopting democracy. They're really moving towards a one-party country, and this is going to put a very powerful leader in place for a very long time. Same as you've got Putin for another 6 years after the elections in Russia. So you're going to be facing tremendous stability and continuity of strong leaders. But this really changes the game, and there's no doubt that China is out to supplant and replace U.S. as number one globally, and is going to be economically very aggressive in terms of trying to use its size to do that. So the battle for hegemony in the South China Sea is on, and I wouldn't underestimate the importance and the complexity of that battle. What the Obama administration had done in the last couple of years is the very clear message when they did the Real with Iran is we want out of the Middle East, the actions in Asia, we've got to pivot to Asia. I think you're going to see the Trump administration say the same thing. Big announcement tonight with North Korea in negotiations with South Korea coming forward and saying they were prepared to talk with Trump. Now there's been indications that North Korea is saying that they will be committed to denuclearization. Let's see what happens. The reality is the sanctions may be biting. If you look at the reports of the challenges they're having getting a sufficient food stock, it's pretty serious. So the sanctions are clearly biting. And I think that Mattis's very aggressive tone as to what the U.S. military was willing to do also sent a signal. So this is going to be very interesting to see what happens. If Trump does manage to achieve denuclearization of North Korea, it's going to be an enormous political coup. So let's see what happens. Russia. As I said, CNN's ratings are way down, and I think Russia is part of it. The whole Russia thing has, I think they've completely overshot their welcome on that one. People in America want to see America improve. They want to see things work. I think they're sick of having the Russian canard pushed down their throat, because it's really not relevant to making their lives better. And at this point, we really do seem ridiculous. As I said, it's very embarrassing in Europe to, and I got a lot of criticism for saying that, people saying, well, Europe is, they're acting like clowns too. No, nothing like Mueller and the whole Russian thing. It's very embarrassing. Very little commentary this week on Putin's speech. It's been remarkably quiet. I discussed it last week. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to read it. It was the presidential address to the Federal Assembly. Saker wrote a piece and published a piece by a military analyst, but it's going to be a very important topic with our next interview with Saker, because the question, of course, is, has Putin really deleted the Americans-Russian option? And it looks like it probably has. I think there's a small chance he's bluffing, but unlikely. We saw another Russian spy poisoned. The intimation was that he was linked to the Trump dossier. Remember, we had a murder in Moscow of a former KGB official said to have been assisting former MI6 agent Christopher Steele in compiling the Steele dossier. Now, if this is true, we've now got, you know, one murder and one attempted murder. The spy is still in the hospital, not out of the woods yet, so it could be two murders. We don't know. Anyway, but that dossier is clearly, the politics of that dossier is hot, which brings me to the QAnon wars. I've been poo-pooing the QAnon wars as mostly hope porn. Q is a poster, and my guess is it's not one person, it's a team. And the question is it for real or not? And of course, what it's promising is purges, cleaning the swamp. I think it was tonight or today, Q posted, North Korea under our control, next to Iran. My question is that such a good thing? If you get all the countries that have been holdouts in the international central banking system or the international financial structure system, and you bring them in under our control, then you're talking about a total unipolar model, going to a central currency, going cashless, God knows. I'm reading right now Elena Freeland's wonderful book on Under an Ionized Sky. And the last thing I want is more central control. So it's not clear to me that North Korea and Iran under our control is such a great thing. Anyway, Q continues to intimate big purges. Now, normally I'd laugh at this, but the reality is we saw a presidential action signed on March 1st reorganizing the rules of military tribunals. If you go back to the executive order at Christmas authorizing the seizing of assets and military tribunals against or martial action using the military against people involved in trafficking. If you combine that with this presidential action on military tribunals, you are getting set up to do something. Now, the Christmas executive order has a list of people now subject to assets eligible to be seized of over 1,000 pages long. Most of them, I've not seen one name I recognize. They're mostly Muslim names and look like non-American, or people not resident in the United States is what it looks like to me. But it's clearly global. We have seen a lot of indictments filed around the country. And, of course, the hope porn comment is Sessions has been working away on this and now is ready to go. And several of the Q posts today said, you know, more is coming on March 12th and March 15th. Remember, that is the Ides of Month. I'm sorry, the Ides of March. That's a very famous political time to do purges. Anyway, what's going to happen? I don't know. It's going to be very interesting between now and the end of the month, because something is clearly up. When you have that many indictments, when you have presidential actions giving the president the ability to use literally the military, because remember, this is the military that put Trump in to do very big arrests and tribunals in the United States. You're clearly setting up a mechanism to do it now. What does that mean? Is it going to be positive or negative? Is it going to be centralizing or decentralizing? I have no idea, but something's up. Now, let's see what happens. If you look at some of the things that have been going on in this country, I would say the Secret Service being involved in the drill training at Parkland and the push for gun control, as well as what went down in California, both the fires in L.A. and San Francisco. It's not clear to me that we're looking at the good guys here making things better for America. So if anything, we're looking at two pro-centralization teams. But I think it's too early to judge how this is going to work and what would go down. Some of the gossip, and this comes from Q, is that there's a video on Hillary Clinton coming from the Wiener laptop. So promise of big dirt. Now, interestingly enough, the sale of Bob Weinstein's company fell through. Now, if Weinstein is arrested in New York, which is what is rumored, that's really going to put him in a corner with the sale being dropped. And the reality is, if you have Wiener's laptop and you have Weinstein singing for his dinner, you could have some pretty interesting times vis-a-vis the Clintons. So we're just going to have to see what happens between now and the end of March. But if you look at that presidential action, something is definitely up. Definitely. Our hero this week is General Robert B. Neller. I said when I discussed the new national security strategies from both the president and Secretary Mattis, I said, I don't know where Mattis thinks he's going to get his soldiers, because if you look at what is happening to the physical health of the population from vaccines, from GMOs, from environmental pollution, I don't see where he's going to get his army unless he's planning on using robots. Well, General Neller told Congress on Wednesday that recruitment is hard work because so few people are qualified to fill the ranks. According to the general, quote, I think we're aware that you know in the nation, I mean, it's a strategic issue that less than 30% of the young men and women of our nation are qualified to join the military, either because of physical, mental, or moral issues. So now we're down to 30%, and now we have to find those that have a propensity or are interested in doing this. Now, interestingly enough, Wilkerson is going to, I'll interview him on March 23rd, and he'll be on the following week, or we'll publish it the following week at the end of March. Wilkerson talked about working on a working group for the military before the election, where they're planning on instituting a draft. It's bad enough that 30% of the young people are qualified and not more, but it's to General Neller's that he was straight about what that number is. Let's go to the movies. I wanted you to watch a short documentary prepared by Bev Harris of Black Box Voting. She has another older documentary out that's quite remarkable as well. This one is Fraction Magic and talks about some of the election tampering, in fact, in a county right next to me outside of Memphis. Black Box Voting and Bev are a great resource, and I would encourage you to watch it because we have the same problem of integrity with the with elections that we have with pensions, that we have with the control and mind control systems, the telecommunication systems. You know, these kinds of compromises are operating across all of the different systems that we depend on to build communication and consensus. And that's why the compromise of the voting system is so dreadful. Our interview tonight is with Dr. Laura Presley, who ran for city council in Austin in 2014, lost the election in a manner that didn't fit with the poll results and expectations. She's an engineer and scientist by training and went to work digging in and finding out what was going on and decided to bring a lawsuit and now has litigation in front of the Supreme Court. It's been quite an interesting road. I had several subscribers push me very hard to get her on the Solari report. And this is a very important but complicated topic because, and one of the reasons it's so important this year, as I said, we're going to elect 435 congressmen, 35 senators, 39 state and territory governors, and legislators for 87 of the 99 state legislative chamber. So, in fact, if we wanted to make very meaningful shifts, we could this year if the elections have integrity. And when you listen to Bev Harris's work and when you listen to Dr. Presley's work, what you realize is there is a very significant problem and it's trench warfare to fix it. And Dr. Presley is right at the heart of that. So I hope you enjoy that interview because this is really important. And it's also tied into what we're going to do to make sure the pension funds are properly managed. Because many of the pension funds are run by government. So state, local, and federal, all three. And when you read the pension fund, state of our pension funds in the wrap-up, you'll see that a lot of what happens is going to be determined by government, not just the federal, state, and local pension funds, but rules and regulations related to the corporate and union, as well as the dumping in of the corporate into the pension benefit guarantee corporation, which is federally controlled. So integrity of process, whether at the pension funds or in the voting booth or in the halls of government, are exceptionally important. And that's why I'm so appreciative of Dr. Presley's efforts. Ask Catherine. Here's the first question. Referring to my discussion with Thomas Meyer on the future of Europe. The interview with that supposed great European intellectual was most disturbing. Actually, Thomas is an exceptionally humble person. He would never describe himself as a great European intellectual. I think he has remarkable insight and is always very wise, and I learn a great deal every time I talk with him. So if anybody was sort of appreciating his intellect, it was me. Then the person continues, he was pimping for Rudolf Steiner, whose followers bragged that they were Luciferians, something supposedly nicer than Satanists. Steiner was not a Luciferian. Now, Steiner had many people show up and go to his lectures and call themselves followers. You know, what they say has nothing to do with him. He writes a lot about Christianity and about things related to Christianity. And if you've ever read his works on Christianity, you would know that Steiner is so far from a Luciferian, I can't imagine it. He mentioned three 19th century American writers. One of them, Mark Twain, wrote a book, The Mysterious Stranger, which was a mockery of the Holy Spirit. I don't know. I've read several Twain books when I was a child, but I'm not a Twain expert. Another, Ralph Waldo Emerson, was an apostate form Christianity. I don't know anything about Emerson's Christianity. According to Otto Scott, he was a member of the Secret Six, the cabal which financed John Brown on his infamous invasion of the South. I don't know. I do know that it's always a very interesting question to me about who supports and energizes Christ. I was raised a Quaker, which is a very different practice. Technically, it's Christian, but it's a very different practice than many Christians. And I studied the Bible and became a Christian in a Pentecostal church where the first thing they did when they sat down to go over our outline for Bible study is say, okay, let's explain to you what the Vatican and the Church of England edited out and what we want you to go get. Because we went back into the books that were edited out, particularly the Book of Enoch and the Book of Thomas, and you end up reading the Dead Sea Scrolls and going back and reading the Essenes. And so you have a very different picture of Christ than the just what is presented in the King James. The thing that most sort of gave me my dominant view of Christianity was my tour of America. I wanted to figure out how a country could say that it was 70% Christian when its fundamental business was running the planet through force and tremendous amounts of very expensive violence, including, you know, what is now over $1 trillion a year, and the black budget and everything else. And what I discovered is that, you know, Christian orthodoxy is a very, very wide tent. And again, it's always interesting who supports and energizes Christ within that tent. So I ended up with a much more complex view of the subject than I started out with. So the author proceeds and says, Western civilization is dead. I disagree. First and foremost, Western civilization to me is a spiritual stream. It's a consciousness. It's a field. It's a morphogenic field. And the way to understand that it is not dead is to go to a place where it is truly not present. And then when you know how bad things really can be, that's when you realize it's not dead yet and you don't want it to die. One of my favorite quotes from T.D. Jakes is, God does not need what you have lost to bless you. Now, I believe we've lost a lot of very valuable culture and parts of Western civilization. But I also think that there's a lot that can be done to nurture what we have left. Then the author continues, it was killed in World War II in Germany. Then an important center of world culture was destroyed. It never revived. Hitler's government was defeated in 1943 and was suing for peace reportedly. Even Hitler himself, Stalin, was willing to offer harsh terms, but FDR insisted on an unconditional surrender. In return, I think that at Tehran, FDR offered the Soviets a gateway into China. Thus, the pro-Christian government of Chiang Kai-shek was fatally compromised. There's no doubt about it that the bankers never liked Christians. And then, of course, we have the Russian Orthodox split from the Vatican. Okay, so I don't know if it doesn't sound like you've ever watched the movie Neverending Story, but their Neverending Story is sort of a child's animated tale that talks about this force called the nothing, which is eating up and destroying all the meaning in the world. And what you're describing is the nothing on the march. And in that sense, you're right. The nothing has been on the march, and it's on the march in many different ways in many different places. And I've certainly watched it run through my family and my friends and my communities and destroy almost everything. It's quite. I never underestimate the power of the nothing. But that's very much part of that discussion that Farrell and I started 2 years ago on why it is our job to keep the culture alive and why it's so important. If you have time, I would really recommend you get a wonderful audio from John Rappaport on The Age of Merlin. It talks a lot about this very issue of keeping the culture alive and preserving it through the dark ages. And then you continue, by the middle of the 60s, Americans were starting to go under culturally. All we can do is protect the Christians. That cannot be done if we attempt to create a hideous reproduction of what that war destroyed. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but I believe that only people with very powerful faith or who are very lucky. So one way or another, you need the angels watching over you. I have an old article, in fact, called Angels Watching Over You about this concept. But at the same time, I would tell you that Jesus supped with the tax collectors and turned water into wine so everybody could dance at a wedding filled with non-Christians. So as I said, who supports and really functions in the spirit of Christ is different than what I see people say that they're who and what are Christians. I've met plenty of Christians who are pretty evil people and struck me as possibly Luciferian. So it's hard to describe. What I will say though is I believe and feel very much part of a very old and ancient Christian tradition, and that is my philosophy, and that is my culture. And I agree with you that it needs to be not diluted with false ideas and and false attitudes. And there has to be integrity in terms of maintaining certain values. And so I appreciate your desire for integrity. And the question is, how do we achieve that? And I always find Thomas to be quite interesting and very much in his heart in alignment with the spirit of Christ. Okay. Hi, Catherine. The more I read about the Mercers, and then there's a long thing about what the Mercers are up to and how dangerous it is. I think the Mercers are tiny relative to what some of the intelligence agencies have been doing and what the whole Zionist culture and the related social media and I would throw in Israeli intelligence have been up to. So if you take U.S. intelligence, Israeli intelligence, and the Zionists all together, the Mercers are tiny in impact relative to the whole big thing. But there's no doubt you have a number, a wide variety of people grabbing all the new technology, including digital technology, and having a big competition about who can control more and manipulate more. I come back to the U.S. intelligence agencies because ultimately, if you look at how the money works, it's the people who control the funding, the governmental line, that have the big bucks. And who really decide in the private sector who's going to be the winner and who's going to be the loser. If you haven't read my article, Meditations at the Crossroads, at one point during the litigation when the other team did something, one of the most dirty things they did, I said, okay, I'm going to whack you back. And I wrote up the story of why I believe it was essentially George H.W. Bush, Rumsfeld, and Cheney who had my mother assassinated in February 1976. And as I said, there's an old history to my experiences with the CIA, and it's one of the reasons it wouldn't surprise me if they were on the other side of this hacking one way or the other. So it's an old and dirty war. But go read Meditations at the Crossroads. And if you look at the institutional capacity that the CIA has been operating since February 1976, when a whole lot of people disappeared in the process of their cleaning up the church committee, you'll understand that this is a much bigger, longer, deeper thing than the Mercers. Hi, Catherine. Okay, this may be a dumb question, but that never stopped me from wanting to learn from those I respect. You're very big on Kucinich, who is for bigger government, for banning assault weapons, first step on that slippery slope. I do think that he is authentic in being for we the people, as am I, but it seems that his solutions would bring about more of the same big government control, albeit with better intentions. One of my sister's great friends is Elizabeth Rogers, who's closely working with Dennis and his campaign, and I do believe that Dennis is not the usual politician. I agree with Dennis on many things, just questioning his solutions. It's been a long while since I've been in any political category. I used to be a Democrat, a Republican, and then a Libertarian. Now I'm a humanitarian. As I'm always willing to learn more, would you mind sharing your reasons for supporting him? Kucinich was one of the first to object to the missing money. He was also one of the first and only ones to bring up the global spraying. So he's been fearless in terms of transparency and hitting hard on the important issues. I really appreciate the missing money. So I would much rather have someone who's honest than somebody I agree with on many of the different policies. He's someone who I think is willing to run the money honestly. Now, I was a bit surprised by the strength of the way he came out on the assault rifles and very disturbed by it. So it's not clear to me what I'm going to do next. Frankly, I've been too focused on making sure that our website launches. But once I launch the website and I'm making sure that I'm getting all the content to you all regularly as promised, I'll think about it some more and I'll have a chance to talk to him. We were going to talk 2 weeks ago and didn't get the chance to. The next question relates to an article Martin Armstrong wrote about CalPERS being on the brink of insolvency, which didn't make much sense to me. CalPERS essentially is all equity. They can't go bankrupt. Now, the different municipalities which have the liabilities, that's a different story, but it just seemed to reflect a oversimplified vision of what's going on here. So The other thing is, there seems to be a push to attack the pension fund. So CalPERS is bad. We all need to leave CalPERS. Well, if when you leave CalPERS, you free CalPERS from any liabilities for what's happened, it could make matters worse. I think you need to be. I just think it was an oversimplified thing, and this is a complex topic. Next question. For decades, the general's role on the basketball court was to support the Globetrotters, make the game interesting for the fans, and keep the basketball game close but loose at the end. Many years, it has been the same script. Globetrotters get all the glory and all the attention. The general follow orders and do their duties, support the Globetrotters. When I look at current government, I see the Globetrotters sitting in front of the team bus with the general sitting in their designated back seats. But there seems to be tension on the bus, and the generals are busy huddling together, speaking in low voices. Why the change? The generals have always followed the script. Did the Globetrotters step over the line or something, or are the generals planning not only to defeat the Globetrotters but to throw them off the bus? If the generals throw the Globetrotters off the bus, then my question will be, will they keep the same bus driver? Yes, you are correct. The dark kid stuff has to be exposed if true change is to happen. Hollywood is the first stop, as the public has been primed with Weinstein, Spacey, etc. I see New York PD planning to arrest Weinstein. Make him talk. He knew a lot. The generals were concerned about their ability to perform given the dependency of the system on them. The system was getting more and more dependent on the military to keep the dollar as the reserve currency, and basically, their operation was getting more and more stripped and under more and more pressure. They were getting loaded down with lots of ancillary requirements and politically correct things. So you had their ability to perform was getting weaker and weaker, and I think they were concerned. If you look at the generals who have risen in the current Trump administration, you see a lot of Marines. Mattis is a Marine. Kelly's a Marine. Who are the Marines? The Marines are the furthest out, the first to land, the most dangerous position. And I think the Marines were very clear that more and more was required of them in terms of keeping the system going, whereas the overall U.S. strategy was not coherent, and it was putting them at risk, and their inability to perform, if it happened, would put the whole system at risk. So I think they just decided they were the adults in the room and they had to do something. Hi, Catherine. I subscribed to your Salaire Report, I believe, about a year ago, and I've not been able to sign in. I know. I'm so sorry. I wrote a detailed message showing you where all the links are, and I hope you're enjoying the content. I'm currently between this place and that place in Mexico. I travel back and forth and sometimes to LA as well. I'm here to do my share for they're doing an organic avocado grove. Sounds heavenly. I'm here to do my share for a collective good for humanity. At any rate, I also worked at Dylan Reed and heard a lot about you. Keep up the good work, and hopefully soon I'll be able to get on your webpage. You and me both. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, a great discussion with John Rappaport, the lies and damn lies of school shootings, because I think part of the pushback here is related to the weakness of the Parkland story, a Parkland school shooting story. I want to hit it hard with John Rappaport, and that was a fascinating discussion. Then March 22nd, we're back with the Solaria Food Series, Harry Blazer, interviewing Dr. Miguel Altieri, father of modern agroecology, fabulous, fabulous Chilean professor at Berkeley who just knows amazing things about agriculture. And then March 29th, Dr. Lawrence Wilkerson, we're going to be talking about the state of the national security. He's not a Trump fan, so get ready. So until next week with John Rappaport on the lies and damn lies of school shooting, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.